You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 231, Encanto. Poor Bruno. He killed my fish. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to dive into today's episode.
Hey there, animation addicts. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
And we are joined by a wonderful co-host, someone who has been on the show a few times before, Pablo Ruiz. Welcome, Pablo.
Woo! Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be back.
So this movie that we are doing Disney's Encanto. It just came out. And of course, when we thought about this movie, Pablo instantly came to mind because he's our friendly neighborhood Colombian. Encanto is set in Colombia, so it made sense that we invited Pablo on. So Pablo, welcome, welcome.
I'm so excited. I still can't believe this movie exists. It's just so tailor-made for me. I don't believe it.
So for those of you who don't know Pablo wrote on our site for a long time. He was our resident Pixar-in-chief person who focused all things Pixar. He was the guy to go to for all the Pixar news. And the website has sort of shifted and changed, and people have come in and out over the years. But Pablo is still the resident Pixar guy in my heart. So it's really exciting to have you back here. But so before we get started, what have you been up to?
So last time I was here was for Moana, which is wild to think about. That was like 5 years ago.
Insane. Yeah.
But I guess Lin-Manuel Disney movies are now my thing.
That was not planned, but yeah. Awesome.
So I live in Canada now, so also excited to turning red next year. Disney is really tailoring their movies to where me and my family live.
Yes.
And I've just been working and watching animated movies still and reading all about them. And I'm so excited to talk about one of my favorite ones ever.
Wow. So that's a big spoiler right up front. One of your favorite animated movies ever. Okay. So let's jump into it because there's a lot that we have to talk about.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Before we hop into our main discussion, let's set the stage. The studio is Walt Disney Animation Studios. It's their 60th animated feature, which I thought was nice. They kind of put that big 60th banner up there as a good reminder. I'm like, oh, good for you guys. Directors were Jared Bush and Brian Howard with co-director Charisse Castro-Smith. Release date was November 24th, 2021. The budget is estimated to be around $120 to $150 million, and box office thus far is $72.5 million, which I was reading up on, you know, the release, and they said, well, this is kind of one of the worst openings for the studio, you know, Pixar, Disney, since The Good Dinosaur, which when you hear that, you're like, oh. Oof, You know, because we all know the Good Dinosaur and the drama that was that. But it is a little different. They also said that this was the highest release since the pandemic for an animated film. So, you know, slowly the movies and the box office is coming back to where it was. So all in all, I still think there's a lot of growth for this film. And I'll be honest, I'm really excited that this one was released exclusively in theaters. There's just something that you miss when you're just watching it at home and you're on your phone and you kind of can allow yourself to be a little bit distracted. Just immersing yourself in a theater experience with other people was really a joy. And I was really excited to be back watching it in theaters.
Absolutely. And so I love reading about box office, and I've read every article about the Encanto box office. And something that I found absolutely hilarious was that, like, you know, all the US websites were like, lowest opening since the Good Dinosaur is still good for the pandemic. And then the Colombian websites were like, it's the biggest opening in the US. It's the number one movie in the US. Huge success. So aww, I thought that was so funny.
They're more on the bright side. I love it. Hey, it should. I mean, doesn't... No use going in the past and comparing it. I mean, really, it was the number one film of the Thanksgiving holiday, and it deserved it because it was amazing. So let's talk about our first thoughts, memories, seeing it in theaters. Pablo, tell us what your experience was.
As I said, I've been excited for this movie for like a year and a half, I think. When Lynn first announced that the movie they had been working on, because we knew that he was working with Byron Howard or something. And he said that it was set in Colombia. And I was like, a Disney animated musical set in my country with music from Lin-Manuel Miranda. Like, you could have lured me into an abandoned warehouse, stolen my kidneys with that headline. But so I obviously bought tickets to the very first screening available. And I was there super early, so early that the previous movie playing in the theater wasn't over. So I was just waiting outside the theater. And then more and more Colombians started showing up. I had no idea. I don't know any Colombians in Vancouver where I live. But we were all wearing like the national team's jersey, traditional clothing, like the flag as a cape. Capes are allowed in this scenario. And no other. So don't come for me, Edna. But I started getting emotional just even before the movie, because it was just like, we were clearly also excited. This community of people that we've never gotten like positive representation in movies. And we were all so excited. This was a Disney movie. It was just incredible. I cried my whole way through the movie. I started tearing up like in the short film, obviously, which we need to talk about. But just cried so much the whole way through, especially the last half hour. So absolutely loved it.
I love that story. I saw this movie over Thanksgiving with my family. I hadn't been watching for it, honestly. But I knew it was coming. And so I was like, oh, great. We'll be able to see that. And then, as always, is Disney always releases their big film around like the second week of February, or they have like the press screening for it, November. The second week of November. And for the last 8 years, I've been working at the Latin Grammys during that time. And so it's like, I never get to go to whatever it is they're planning. And I'm like, oh, geez, lame. But Morgan went and she said, oh my gosh, it's so great. So I was really excited to be able to see this over Thanksgiving with my family. And I'm like the youngest of six kids. And I would consider my family, like all of my siblings, to be pretty cool. And, you know, having always looked up to them, I related to Mirabel a lot in a lot of ways. And like, I basically started crying from the beginning and I cried throughout. And then my sister-in-law was like, I saw you crying. I'm like, shut up. It was just really cool because it was like, I was also just having come from working the Latin Grammys. I was like, oh my gosh, these are my people. And even though I'm like as gringo as they come, my heart pretends to be Latin. So I was very much of a fan.
So for me, I really hadn't been invested in this movie at all. There was a period of time where every single animated movie, the trailer, the teaser trailer, the fifth trailer, the 30-second trailer, all of the different posters, I was in it. And I knew everything about every single animated movie that was coming out. But really since I've had kids, I've kind of pulled away just because I don't have as much time to stay as invested. So for this film, I hadn't even seen the trailer, to be honest. I'd really seen the, I'd really just seen the posters, the one with the door and the, kind of like the, you can see the magic within. And that's all I really knew. So that being said, just from that alone, the movie looked okay, but I wasn't super hyped up for it. And boy, was I glad to be wrong, because this movie blew me away in so many different ways. I cannot speak highly enough about this film, and I'm so happy that this film exists. And I think one of the main things is that this film is so different than just a lot of the other films out there. I can't really put my finger on it, but it doesn't have like this traditional, you know, villain structure, or it's not a princess film. It's not a fairy tale. It's kind of just magical realism in a way. So we do have that magical element, but it's really set in reality, and it's set around this family, and we don't, it's not a journey film. We don't go places. We don't, you know, she doesn't go to, you know, find some magical waterfall that's going to save the family or save the home. Really all the work that needs to be done is done right in the home with the personal experiences, you know, as Mirabelle goes and she's talking to each one of the family members, and that's really how life is. And I really liked that, because I felt that this was just so different than a lot of the films that we've seen recently.
Yeah, I agree completely. I remember when Brave came out, and the trailers had made it seem like a really like huge adventure. And then it all takes place like within like a couple of days, all within like riding distance of the castle. And I was surprised by that. But looking back, I really appreciate these like low stakes movies where it's just like a family having some problem. There's always magic involved. And then you just get to really focus on the characters and the world, which was so beautiful, obviously.
Yeah, the part where the music that came into it was just really cool, because through all of these Nerdy Couch discussions, we've done a series of like every song that kind of goes into like the formulaic version of musicals, of especially animated musicals. And it was just really interesting to see how they adapted it to this story, where it wasn't like most of the songs were about the individuals and like explaining their own character arc. Versus, you know, moving a plot-driven story around. And it was cool to see how that goes. Because, I mean, as I thought about it, I was like, yeah, that kind of, I mean, a lot of movies, a lot of the songs do that in movies. But I felt like this one did it way more than most.
Yeah, I felt that the structure of this was a little bit more like a traditional musical, where we've become so accustomed to the Disney animated musical and the ebbs and flows that that has. But I felt like just the different songs, like you had mentioned, like Louisa's song or Isabella's song, like it just felt like I was just watching a musical, and that character had a lot to say. And so they had to sing it, you know, where it wasn't necessarily songs only relating to Mirabelle and her arc. It was the whole family as a whole had a lot to say. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so the soundtrack came out a couple of days before the movie on November 19th. So obviously on November 18th at 9 p.m. Pacific, I was just refreshing Spotify, waiting for it to drop. I must have been one of the first like 10 people to start listening to it, because it was like 9:00.
I love it.
But so I started listening to it, and I was walking my dog that night, and I was just listening to like Luisa's song and Isabella's song. And I was like, I already know these characters so well. And like, I've seen them in the trailers, and it's like the strong one and the beautiful one, but the song immediately made them it gave them three dimensions. And I was just so impressed that I was already like, okay, so Luisa is super strong, but she feels that she has to carry everything for the family. And so it was a great way to introduce the characters, because, you know, there's like 12 major characters, or like at least 12 named characters. And the songs are such a big part of us being even to remember them. Like, I've seen so many movies with huge cast where you're like the strong one, and I haven't seen anyone refer to Luisa as the strong one in conversations. They always use everyone's names, which is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, that's true. So that's one of the things that I noted as really one of the highlights of this film, is that it does have a very large cast, and they play pretty big roles. It's not, you know, they're not just a whole bunch of, oh, this is our family, but majority of them are background characters, throwaway characters. They're really important to this family dynamic as everyone in the family should be, right? And I thought that they just did such a wonderful job of making everyone feel real and important and memorable. And I think the very first song, La Familia Madrigal, does a really, really great job of helping to present the stage. It's sort of like our bell moment, if you will. But in introducing us to the family, but not only the family, we get a lot about Mirabel and how, you know, she's really kind of trying to shrug this off. Like, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's not a big deal. She's not 100% confident in who she is because she doesn't have the gift. And I thought that was a wonderful opening number to present that. And then on top of that, we get these other songs for some of the other family members, which was great. So let's talk about the characters since we are discussing that right now. So first and foremost, I got the Art of Encanto book. So shout out to Chronicle Books for sending that over. And it just arrived yesterday. And so as I was preparing for this episode, I went through that and I absolutely loved this art book. So if you are an art book fan, I definitely recommend this one because this is one of the better examples of how to do an art book, because mostly they spend a lot of time focusing on the characters and the evolution of the characters and how they got to the final design. Some art books, they focus a lot on like, oh, well, this is what the final design of the character. And then they really don't show you a lot of the pre-production and the changes. And that's always disappointing to me because I really like to see like, okay, how did they change? You know, was she tall? Did she have long hair? Did she have this? Glasses? No glasses. And because this is such a character-filled and heavy movie, that's really all the book is. It's just all of the characters, the home, and then Columbia as far as the setting. And then that's it. That's the book. And I thought they just did such a really, really, really great job. So if you want to check it out, we'll have a link in the show notes. But it just helped me appreciate all the work that went into creating this cast of characters even more.
I'd like to give a shout out to Lorelei Bove for like how much her influences came into this. Because when I saw her name at the end, I was like, yes, this is exactly Lorelei Bove. Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited to get that book. I haven't gotten it yet because I imagine that we're a month from Christmas. I imagine someone's going to get it for me. Nice. I'll probably get it more than one time because it's the most obvious gift to give me this year. But if anyone is listening, please give it to me. I don't mind having three copies. I just need at least one.
You hear that, family? Do it.
Perfect.
Okay, so let's talk about Mirabel. She's obviously our main character. She's the main focus. And so I just love the name Mirabel because I have a friend from high school named Mirabel, and she kind of looks like this Mirabel. And so I just thought that was fun, you know. So anyone who, you know, it's nice to see, you know, different characters and names and diversities represented in different films. But what I loved about her is that her design was just so great. Like, she wasn't, you know, the stick thing, perfect girl, which that's her sister. And she's just normal. Like, that's all I can say about her. She's totally normal. She has this beautiful curly hair. I love the hand stitching on her blouse and her skirt.
Oh, I love that.
You can just tell that, like, and it includes each member of the family. Like, family is so important to her. And so there's a chameleon, which represents the other cousin.
Amilo. You know,
yes. And so it just shows like she loves her family and they're a part of her, and it's a part of her clothing and her style. And I got to say, love the pop of color on the glasses, the bright green. I thought that was very nice choice. But so what do you guys love about Mirabel or don't love about Mirabel?
First of all, she wears glasses. We have never had a Disney protagonist who wore glasses, I think, or at least not a Disney heroine. I think what you said about her design, I really love it. For the longest time, if you Googled Encanto concept art, as one does, obviously, the only drawing was of Isabella, and I didn't know about anything about the movie back then. So I was like, oh, it's just a traditional, like, just the most beautiful person ever, like really thin. And then when the trailer started coming out, I was like, oh, that was actually her sister. Like, the protagonist is just a normal person with amazing curly hair. Like, the hair in this movie is just the progress that Disney has made with their animation. It's just in full display. But yeah, I really love Mirabel. I love that she's obviously, she wants a gift so badly, as we would all in her, as we all would be in her situation. But she's not like just jealous about that. She's excited for Antonio to get his. She walks with him to the door. So I really like that, even though she obviously wants this so badly, it doesn't really define her. Like, she still loves her family. She's not jealous of anyone except maybe Isabella because of her, of the perfect life she thinks she has. But overall, I just really, really liked her. And I really like that even though she wants this, she doesn't let that get in the way of loving her family.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, like I mentioned, like all of my siblings, because I come from a big family and I have a lot of, like I said, I consider them very cool people. And I look at like all the things that they've done and be like, their accomplishments also, I feel like, help me and be like, yeah, I'm connected to them. Yeah, they're cool. So am I, right? And so I can see that part of her, but I can also completely see the side where it's just like, why am I not like this? But at the same time, she has completely, like the little kid at the beginning, if I were you, I would be really sad. She's just like, I'm not, thank you, move on. And like, I'm sure that, you know, in the story of this girl, she probably was very sad for a very long time, but then realized that it wasn't going to help her anyway. So might as well just be happy with where she's at or with who she is with. And I think that's its own thing. Like the fact that she was able to, even in the moment where she says, like, I just need a miracle. Even up until that moment, she has been so completely just, I am not going to let this separate me from my family. My family is also me, and they make me cool just by being here as well. So I really appreciated that about her. And I thought it was very admirable. Like it's a very admirable quality just to be able to like look at other people shine and be like, I am cool, you know, vicariously through you.
Yeah, like I could definitely,
that's cool.
I could definitely see like a lesser version of this movie being about like, she tries to touch Antonio's door before him to get a gift, and then that's what breaks the magic or something like that. And I'm really glad that that wasn't the case. She wasn't trying to get a, like, she obviously wanted a miracle. There's a whole song about it. But she was fine with just, okay, Antonio got his gift. That's amazing. And it's only when Abuela says a gift as special as you are that obviously that stings, because that's like,
oh, gosh,
the authority figure in your life being like, maybe you're not that special, which is not pleasant.
Yeah.
Oh, let's talk about Abuela.
Yeah, she's, you know, obviously our villain of the story, but she's the matriarch of the story. And I use villain in quotes because, you know, with families, you know, sometimes certain family members have expectations, which may or may not be warranted. In this case, you know, she had these weird expectations that everyone needed to, you know, have this gift to help the family. And, you know, Mirabel didn't have one. And so she kind of, whether she did it purposefully or not, pushes her aside. And it really, she does it in such a way that's so dismissive that it's just, it's hurtful to Mirabel, which is sad because you can tell she does love this family, but how real was that when you saw the way that she was repeatedly putting Mirabel down and how it made Mirabel feel, I totally could relate to that. I was like, oh, we've all been there. Maybe not, but, you know, where you've had a family member who kind of acts that way and they don't necessarily know that what they're doing is not great.
How I kind of see Abuela is like, she really just want, like, if you look at, okay, she was afraid the moment that Mirabel didn't get a gift. And so automatically thinks something's wrong with Mirabel, like what is happening. And then Bruno has this vision and sees that Mirabel is the, you know, one that could break or make the family. And so you could just see like her grasp of like, we have to keep things tight. And like, I have to solve this problem. And even if that means like, if Mirabelle does anything, she could break up our family. So Mirabelle, just don't do anything. Just stop doing stuff. And like, it's just, it is that in itself that actually pushes and brings up this like shadow of Mirabelle, her hurt feelings. And then everyone, you know, feels that. And then that shows the cracks. Like, it's the, obviously the vicious circle of trying to prevent the future ends up leading to the future. So I can, on both sides, I'm like, Abuela, come on. But at the same time, you're like, I can kind of see where why you would be that way. But yeah, come on.
Yeah. And I think we can all relate to when we're so afraid of losing something that we like either hold on too tight and that ends up to us losing that person or thing. So I thought it was really interesting. And I love how she obviously cares so much about the family, but she like, it's a weird thing because when she's talking to Isabella about her match with Mariano, for example, she's always like, oh, it's such a great match. It's such a great match for the family. And she never is like, hey, Isabella, do you like this guy? It's mm-hmm. always like, oh, right. it's great for the family. And it's like, you're putting the family above everything, but you're forgetting that the family's like, it's people.
right.
Which I think some of us can do sometimes where we like, we're like, this is the most important thing. And it's like, oh, it's just people. Like, it's individuals. And I really care about them. And the family Madrigal is not like a weird thing that can be perfect. You got to care about the people that make the family.
Yeah, there's a point in time where after Mirabelle sees the cracks and then Abuela comes down and she's like, nothing is wrong with La Casa Madrigal. And I'm like, oh, double entendres are great. Like, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but you could use the phrase La Casa Madrigal as the not just the house itself, but the household and the people within it and the family in as part of that household.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with us, okay? We are perfect, I tell you.
She sure thinks that.
I mean, it's interesting because they have this, the idea of our gifts are given to us in order to serve the community. And that is, I mean, that's definitely a feeling that, you know, with or without magic, I believe that like my family kind of has that mentality of like, how are you, what are you doing to serve others? And so I can see that as like a lot of times, you know, the effect of putting others before yourself. But at the same time, it's like, well, you need to, you know, secure your own life mask before you can help others type thing. So it's that that balancing act.
Yeah. And something that I really like is the way that the powers are shown. I really like when Disney movies like really explored the creativity of their world or the powers or anything. Like I love my favorite part about the Toy Story movies is just how much sense they make. It's like, of course, if toys were alive, like birthdays would be terrifying to them. Like I had never thought about that, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, yep, that makes sense. And seeing little details like Luisa exercising with the house, making the floor a treadmill. Like I just love those little details. Or like on I've seen it three times now, and on the third time I noticed that when during Antonio's celebration, as soon as the fireworks go up, like Dolores covers her ears, because obviously like they must be so painful to her. So it's just those little details that show that people making the movie cared so much and thought about everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So who do you want to talk about next? Should we talk about the aunts and uncles and then go to the cousins, or should we talk about the sisters?
I think we should talk about Bruno. Bruno. Even though the song tells us not to.
Don't talk
about No. I was really glad that, I mean, I saw it twice. So the second time there were a lot of things that I didn't notice the first time, but I did notice in the second one, like even in the very beginning opening song where they're introducing everyone, it's just like, and then there's Bruno. Oh, but we don't talk about Bruno. It's like, even at the very beginning, they like put this in there. I was like, good job. Way to be. that poor guy. Yes. Like, he can't say anything. He can't make a comment on anything without people assuming that it's the future. You know, like the fact that, like, oh, your fishlet's sick. You killed my fish. And then, like, I was just, I didn't try to ruin your day. I was just, you know, commenting that you looked sad.
I was majorly impressed that he was able to basically live within the walls of the home for who knows how many years.
Right.
But, and it was just so sad. He, you could tell he still wanted to be part of the family, and he had that little place setting, you know, right, kind of a direct extension of the table. I'm like, oh, how does it get this way? And that's what I love about this film is because it's so real. I mean, there are rifts that happen in families, and people don't want it to be that way, but it just is. It's, a lot of times we're just too prideful to talk about it. And that really is right. What this movie is all about, is you just got to talk about it as hard as it is.
Yep. That little table is quietly one of the saddest things I've seen in a Disney movie. You could just, like, as soon as they showed it, as soon as we realized that he just looked at the dining table through that little crack, and then he had his own little plate, like, you could hear the whole movie, like, the whole movie theater just, like, just, like, such an emotional moment. I really like Bruno. I love when a character is talked about a lot before we meet them, because it's like, oh, what is this Bruno? And we see, in We Don't Talk About Bruno, we see Camilo shapeshift into Bruno, and he's like singing, like, a 7-foot frame rats along his back. And you're like, this is terrifying. And then the first time we see the actual Bruno, it's also super scary, because it's that really cool shot where the rat hands him a piece of the prophecy, and there's, like, lightning, and you just see a silhouette of a man, and it's like, oh, this is super scary. And then you meet him, and he's just, like, the funniest, like, goofiest guy that has obviously spent so many years by himself with his rat friends, and it's just a really nice character.
One of my favorite quotes from Bruno was when he's like, oh, we could watch, you know, some entertainment, you know, and he grabs the rats and puts them on this little stage thing. And he's like, oh, and this one's great. Their love could never be. And it wasn't until the second time I saw it that I, like, actually heard what he said. And he's like, this telenovela that he just described is like, their love could never be, you know, because she's his aunt and she has amnesia, so she can't remember that she's his aunt. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, that is so telenovela.
Absolutely. Like, another cool little detail that I noticed was that the first thing he offers is sports, and the scene he shows is from a famous game between Colombia and Germany in the 1990 Soccer World Cup. So just the attention to detail in this movie is incredible. Like, the way the plates look, the food, like, everything is just so accurate. And obviously, like, with other movies set in different cultures, I had read so much about the work that Disney puts. But seeing the things that I'm super familiar with, like in the dinner scene with Mariano, the plates that they use for that particular dish, I was like, that's exactly what we would do. This is just incredible. It's so accurate. So I was just delighted with that.
So you give the film your stamp of approval as far as authenticity and true to culture.
Oh, absolutely. They did such a good job. I loved it. The food looked amazing. There's a moment where Mirabella and Antonio are under the bed, and she points with her lips, which is something that we all do in Colombia for some reason. The clothing is just perfect. The mix of English and Spanish was really well done, I thought. And they got Carlos Vives to sing Colombia Mi Encanto, who is, like, my favorite Colombian musician. So again, this movie is just tailor-made for me.
Nice.
So let's talk about Isabella.
Yes.
The perfect one.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. Why is it that all the pretty ones, like, seem to be, are always seen as, like, evil? Like, that's one of those tropes that I thought whenever she came in. And yes, I get it. You know, the fact it's a sibling rivalry and why she would definitely feel like Isabella was. But at the same time, like, she really is just drawn that way.
Some of the hardest times I've laughed were with Isabella, especially, like, during we Don't Talk About Bruno, when everyone's sharing like the terrible prophecies that he gave them. And she's like, the life of my dream was promised and I'll get it. And it just cut, like, you can see Mirabel in the background and her face is just incredible. Like, I laughed so much at that.
I thought she had a really cool design. She was, you know, very aesthetically pleasing. You know, it made sense that the perfect sister has like the long, beautiful black hair. But I just, you know, going along with each of their gifts, she has this gifts of flowers and making everything beautiful. And her, just her dress was so beautiful with the flowers on it. And we haven't really talked about, you know, each one of their rooms yet, but, you know, she has this flower shop of a room. It's covered every inch with flowers, you know, and looking at the art book, you know, they wanted to keep her very princessy. So they had the pastels initially to represent her. And then, you know, as she kind of came into her own, she had more colors. And, you know, I loved that she was able to, like, succulents and cacti were, which are very sharp and prickly, and typically wouldn't have been associated with her. But like, that was something that came out of her. And it was cool. And it was just really, really cool and exciting. I thought she was a good foil to Mirabel.
First off, hello, boyfriend. Oh my gosh, he was so funny. I really liked him.
He just has so much and so much love to give.
There was a moment where, like, is he going to end up with Mirabel? I don't think that would work out. And then goes up with the other cousin, like, yes, this works out.
I liked that other cousin. What was her name?
Dolores.
Yes.
Dolores.
Yeah, I really liked her.
She was cute.
I really like, there's a moment where when Mirabel assembles the prophecy and then her dad walks in on him, on her. And then she's like, he's like, we gotta keep this secret. No one can know. And the door just opens a little bit and you can see the Dolores silhouette and everyone's like starts chuckling before they come to her. I was like, yep, she heard everything.
Yeah, her power was really funny. Each of the powers that the different family members had, some were kind of like really quirky and weird. And hers was one of that, where it was just the ability to hear something miles and miles away, which that would be miserable, I must say.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I do not desire that gift in the least, but it doesn't seem to bother her. She must be really great at tuning things out, but then she can hone in when she needs to. But of all the powers, nope, that is not one that I want.
Yeah, agreed.
We have Luisa, who is the, you know, the big tough sister. And I loved her design. I thought she was just so cool. And they, you know, in the art book, they talked about how they designed her after like Olympic, you know, weightlifters, you know, female weightlifters, you know, and how and shot putters and how their bodies are structured. And it's just very like top heavy. She has this very thick neck, very strong. But she's still feminine. She still had these just feminine qualities to her. And I loved her song. It just felt very novel and fun. And it kind of reminded me that it was kind of done in the style of A Friend Like Me from Aladdin. It was a little bit more abstract. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was unexpected. And watching it, yeah.
There's a moment in the song that made me laugh so hard when... we see like a ship like the Titanic and it says Madrigal on the side and they're heading straight to an iceberg and the donkeys are playing violins
yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, the donkeys were cute. They also kind of reminded me of Lost in the Woods from Frozen 2, where there's lots of yes. reindeer, you know, singing the background chorus. You know, the donkeys were her thing. I loved it. And she's yeah. she's really fun.
You know, there's something about Lin-Manuel Miranda where he generally, like, if you've listened to any, a lot of his stuff, like I have, he has a very stylistic way of doing his thing. And he generally writes in the same key that he himself would sing, but it's like a little too low for women. And that was my only nitpick about this whole thing, is just like both Mirabel's and Luisa's songs just seemed a little low for them. And like, I was just like, come on, just put it up like one key higher or something. Because it's like, it sounded like it would have been difficult for me to sing it. But it also sounded like they were stretching themselves to do it that way. And I was like, come on, Lynn. But it was, I loved the intentionality of each song and how they all kind of like played into each other like that. So
yeah, one of the first reviews, because as soon as the embargo was lifted, I was refreshing Twitter like a maniac to see what people were thinking. And one of the first reviews I saw was that the movie was great, but the songs were like superfluous. And I don't know what that critic saw, because I think like each song was so well used, and like there's no filler songs. There's nothing, like each of them advanced the character so well. So I was really impressed. And we need to talk about the visuals of the songs, but before that, are there any other characters that we want to talk about?
Casita?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, let's talk about the casita in the room as the room. How does casita work? Like, there's still this whole thing that I just do not understand. I still don't understand where all the magic comes from. And you know, also, why are they not considered gods in this community? And also, like, why are they trying to convince another family to marry into them? Because, like, they're obviously the top, you know, top family of the community. But also casita, it's like, is casita the miracle for Abuela? Because Abuela doesn't really have any special gifts. She's just the leader. And she just has the house. This was something that confused me to no end.
Yeah, it took me until my second viewing to be like, wait, does Abuela have a gift? Or is it, which also makes it interesting, because you know how when sometimes when other people do something that annoys you, it's because it reminds you of yourself without you admitting it. So it's also like,
yeah,
Mirabel being the first one without a gift since Abuela, there might be a psychological link there. But yeah, I assume that casita is her gift, or it's not really clear, but
yeah.
I love casita so much, and I love the sense of humor and the magic. Just when Mirabel is like unloading that package and casita's just taking things away in the background, like that kind of thing, I just love.
Yeah, casita was really fun. I figured that casita was the gift given to her. She didn't have a gift in a way, but she needed a miracle in that moment of time. And casita was, you know, the candle, and out sprung casita from there. But that's kind of how I saw it.
Which honestly, if I had to choose, I would choose that.
Oh, yeah. I loved how in one version, or I don't know, didn't they say that the house, it evolves as is needed, right? And so it started smaller and then grew and grew and grew. Is that true? Or was that just in the art book that I saw that?
I think that's in the art book.
Okay. So in the art book, it started as just like a little shack. And then, you know, it grew like a tower and then a gazebo over here. And it just kept growing over a period of time. So yeah, I think it said like in an older version of the script, you know, that's what happened over the centuries. That's kind of what had happened. Another thing with casita, initially in the way that this film was going to be is, Mirabel, from the concept art that I saw, she had like pink hair and she seemed like a more modern person. Cause this was kind of set in like early 1900s ish, which I liked. It kind of made it a little bit more timeless. But in another version of the script, they had it where Mirabel found like a magical doorknob that she was able to put on a door and it transported her to this world. Obviously it's a totally different version of the film, but I liked ultimately where they came, where it was the house that was this living, breathing thing. And ultimately the house's powers is only as strong as the family's relationships with each other. So if the family is cracking and breaking, casita's cracking and breaking. And only when they're able to fix those bonds does casita therefore, you know, do that. But at the same time, if casita is breaking, so do the powers that the family members have. So it's even more important that you have to stay strong as a family, because if you're not only is the house going to fail, but your powers are going to go away too. And we see that with, you know, Luisa's power. She's weak. She's not able to pick things up. And yeah.
So Mirabel at the end, when she's given the magical doorknob and then she opens it, is that now, is now casita belong to her? Like, is she the dona of this entire house? Like, I'm kind of confused. Everybody else gets a room, but she gets the whole house, you know.
That will be answered in the 2025 Disney Plus series about it.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Yeah, because I was super emotional, like from the moment when, from like the Isabella song onward, I was just crying the whole time. And when the whole town shows up to like help them build their house back, I was just bawling.
That got
and,
me too.
And then the doorknob, that's just also even more, which apparently is a leftover from a previous script that they found a new way to use and make me cry. So good job on them. And then I love that the new Casita's door is a mural of all of them instead of just one of them. It's all of them together, which I really, really like.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I liked that the house was able to have these doors that would form when they got their gift at the age of five. And they each had their own special room that they could go into. And it was the rooms itself just defied expectations and, you know, was this old, this world within a world. And I thought it was really cool that the worlds were able to become what the person needed it to be. And I also thought it was kind of hilarious that Mirabelle was still in the nursery. It felt very much like Peter Pan. Oh, this is our last night in the nursery.
That hurt so much.
Oh, it was sad. It's like,
yeah. It was so, so sad, that part where she was just like, everybody else gets this whole world and she's stuck in this like nursery place.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Antonio's room reveal was also incredible. Like little girl shouting, like, it's bigger on the inside. But just then that whole sequence where like the animals are taking Antonio around, I was just like, my mouth was on the floor. The movie's so beautiful, visually speaking. Mm-hmm. And the music was also just great in that sequence.
So I gave my little nitpick about the music, but I really do have to say that the music was so much fun. And so I have never met or seen or heard of Jermaine Franco, but I really enjoyed his score.
It's actually a woman, so it's her score.
Oh, her score.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah. I was,
how do you say her name?
I have no idea. So Jermaine Franco is what I'll go with.
I mean, you can understand why I didn't know.
Yeah, no, I was actually really surprised because I was like, I was Googling everything about this movie and I was like, oh, Jermaine Franco, what has he done? And I Googled this name and I was like, oh, it's a woman. That's fantastic.
Awesome.
That's really cool. I feel like there's very few female composers.
Yeah, exactly. Like I got my Spotify Wrapped yesterday and all I listened to is movie scores. And from time to time, I'm like, there has to be more female composers by now. Like, come on. And I search for them and there's like a couple, but not a ton. So I hope that that she gets a lot of work in the future because I really liked her score. And that's not really usual for me with Disney movies. I love their songs and I listen to them all the time, but there's no like Disney movie score that I listen to consistently or as much as like say Pixar. Like Michael Giacchino was my top artist of the year. and that's because of the Incredibles and Ratatouille and Inside Out and Up and Cars 2, of course. Mm-hmm. This is the first Disney score that I think I'll just have in my rotation, listening to it all the time. Obviously, I'm the least impartial person in the world because this is just the music of my country put in a movie. But I thought she did a fantastic job.
So how did you feel when the Spanish song came up?
So something that I forgot to say is that I went to see it with my wife and three of my closest friends. It was like...
Where's your wife from?
She's Canadian.
Okay.
So all my friends were Canadian and I basically invited them to enjoy the show of me crying so, so much. and some of them had like other things, but they were like, no, I need to go to this screening particularly because it's the first time that Pablo will see this movie and it's going to be incredible to see him like cry so much. And I delivered. And as soon as the song in Spanish started, one of my friends just like looked over at me and I was just like heaving sobs because it was so exciting to see have a song fully in Spanish in a Disney movie. You know, like Coco was amazing and it had a lot of Spanish in the songs, but this was just a song in Spanish with no translation really. And it's also such a beautiful song. Like I really, really, really like the song. without context, when I was listening to the soundtrack before seeing the movie, I had no idea where that was going to play over. I thought that maybe it would be like a metaphor and we'd see like a little animation of two caterpillars, in case anyone doesn't know yet. Orugitas means little caterpillars. So I had no idea how it was going to be used, but I cried my whole way through it. And I loved that song so much. So I really, really, really liked it.
I mean, I thought it was cool that that was the love song of the movie, you know?
Yep.
And how they switched it, and the end credits, they have the English translation of the song, which is normally not the way they do it. Obviously, they tend to do the English one during the movie and then the Spanish one maybe later. But the fact that they switched it that way, I was like, oh, that's really cool. Do you know if they did when they have like the full Spanish version of the movie, do you know if they kept the English version as the credit song?
Yeah, I asked my parents who saw the movie recently in Colombia. Yeah, that's how it works. So essentially the music, obviously every song is in Spanish in the dubbed version. And then in the credits, Colombia Me Encanto plays first, and then Tu Oruguitas, which is the name of the song in English, which I love. That they don't change Oruguitas. It's just like, It's two Oruguitas now. And even in this song, it's like two mariposas and everything. And then I was listening to the music in other languages just out of curiosity. And from the track list, it seems to be that way, where like in Italian, for example, like in the movie, the song is in Spanish in every language, which I love. And then the credit version is translated to whatever country they're in.
Oh, interesting.
That's awesome.
Cool.
I do feel though, so with Lin-Manuel Miranda, he definitely has a style. It's very distinct.
Right.
And I could feel that this was him. Like, he has a certain way that he does his lyrics and like the timing and the cadence of it, you know?
Yes.
And so as I was watching it, I don't know if that was necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. Ultimately, the music was great, but is it maybe a slight detractor where I'm like, wow, this just feels really like Lin? What do you think?
I did have a moment like that as well. Like I said,
I think it's the beginning song, maybe because that was the first song.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So they released a clip from it about a month ago, and it was just like a 30 or 40 second clip. And the first time I listened to it, I was like, oh, this feels kind of weird. It feels kind of off. Like, this is like, it doesn't really feel like Disney movie. And I remember that in 2016, they did the same thing where they released like a 40 clip from You're Welcome. And the first time I listened to it, I was like, oh, I don't know if I love this. And then those 40 seconds just get stuck in my head. And I'm like, I guess I'll watch it again. And then I'm like, oh, I actually really like this. And then I would just watch the clip over and over and over again. And the exact same thing happened with both You're Welcome and La Familia, the Family Madrigal, or La Familia Madrigal, where like the first impression, I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel like Disney. And then I'm like, oh, but I actually really like it.
Yeah, it's funny because now thinking back to You're Welcome, I'm like, well, You're Welcome, it's a staple, it's a classic, like it's a Disney classic now. So it's funny to think that at the time, you know, there was maybe thoughts of like, oh, this is kind of weird, a little different, but yeah. Sometimes it just takes a little bit to fully bring something into the fold, which I'm sure these songs will forever be Disney classics.
I sure hope so, because I really, really love them. Especially, I love that they're stylized visually. Like, I feel we had gotten like some hints of that. Like, You're Welcome has that fun animation in the background, but no other song in Moana does. And then in Frozen 2, we get that fantastic ballad with the reindeer singing in the background, which was so funny. But here, every song had like some, except for the first one, had some sort of visual, like, a whole visual sequence built around it that I really, really love. The Isabella song, What Else Can I Do, was absolutely beautiful. But I think Waiting on a Miracle is one of my favorite visual sequences that Disney has ever done. The way like everything slows down and she's like, there are kids with like sparklers running around, and there's just like that beautiful streak of sparkling light that Mirabel walks around, and the fireworks. And then there's like, she's like dancing around like I don't even know how to describe it, like a weird version of Abuela, and there's lights all around. And I've seen it three times, and every time I've just like started crying just out of like the beautiful visuals on the screen.
It was really pretty.
This year we got In the Heights, which I had been waiting for so long. And
yeah.
I saw seven times in theaters, so I really loved it.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Then we also got Vivo, which I wasn't that big of a fan of, but like it was also like a Lin-Manuel project. And then on the same day that the soundtrack for Encanto was released, his movie Tick, Tick, Boom, it came out on Netflix. So it's just like, I feel 2016 was the first like Lin year where it was like Hamilton and In the High and Moana.
Yeah.
And then this year we got four of his projects, which are obviously what all were probably greenlit around this huge success of Hamilton. I'm a huge fan and his music just really works for me.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy for him. I really like seeing when people are able to really dig into what they're really good at, and especially him, because he's so good at being different at what he does. It's like his style, he's so good at his style, and he has honed it down to make it something that everybody can appreciate in some way. And I really love seeing that. So I'm really happy for him and all of his success.
So I guess our next question is, what's next for Disney Animation?
Yeah, I'm curious about this because I feel there was a time where like we knew older movies like 3 years in advance.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like especially I know Pixar did it where I knew there was an announcement that I didn't like at the time where it was like all sequels and Coco, and I knew that between like 2016 and 2020 there would be like one original Disney Pixar movie. And now like I guess we know what's coming out from Pixar next year with Turning Red and Lightyear, but has there even been another Disney animated movie announced?
I looked it up. And so they've announced the film. There is a film for 2022 and one for 2023. 2023 doesn't have a date. 2022, so 1 year from now, the 61st film is called Searcher Clade. It's a tentative title because they filed some trademarks for it. But it says, here's a little based on the casting call that they were looking for. It says, right. Ethan Clade is a biracial 14-year-old. The studio is looking for voiceover talent 18 or older to play the role. He sounds very much like a typical teenager, playful, quick-witted, can also retreat. He's a wise A, isn't particularly tough. The actor voicing him should be funny, likable, and sound like a 14-year-old, but you have to be 18 years old. Anyways, that's all we know. Basically, they're looking for this guy.
So it hasn't been formally announced.
No. Which is crazy because, I mean, it's so a year out. But we know, you know, if you've watched the making of Frozen 2, even just 6 months before, they are like trying to, they still don't know what's going on.
I still can't believe they released that documentary where we see that they just hadn't come up with a story
for
Frozen 2.
It's such a bad look.
I was just like, this is absolutely crazy.
You could look at it two ways. It's like, wow, look at, they were able to get it all together and look how amazing it was. Or it's like,
right,
you guys didn't know what you were doing at all and you're proud of it.
I mean, it's kind of like the Sweatbox where they were probably like, well, we already paid for this to be made, so we might as well release it, even though it may make us look bad. But at the same time, it's cool to see kind of how everything changed. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
yeah,
because I will forever feel sorry for Sting. But at the same time, I'm like, it worked out really well because, you know, Emperor's New Groove is one of my favorites. But how it kind of like it just threw stuff against the wall and like, you know, OK, let's see what sticks. It was. For something like Frozen 2, it was like, I kind of wanted you to have more of an idea.
Yeah, as far as this film goes, like even looking at the art book, like it didn't seem like there was really anything they were really stuck on. I'm sure that's a sweeping generalization and there were lots of, you know, problems during production or characters they couldn't quite figure out. But in the end, it was an amazing film. So let's do our ratings. Pablo, would you like to go first?
Yes. Obviously, I'm Colombian. I know I love Disney. This is not partial. I recognize that the film has flaws, but just emotionally, I cannot give it less than 5 stars. It was just tailor-made for me. I loved it. I cried my way through. So 5 stars for me.
Chelsea?
I'm going to say 4.5 stars for me. It was like, I did cry. I cried both times, actually. So the first time it was cathartic. The second time it was like, even though I knew everything that was happening, it still got me. And I was like, oh, this is so sweet. So I feel like they did a really great, great job with everything. I think 5 star, for me to get up to a 5 star, I would need a little bit more time with it. But as of right now, it's 4.5 star.
So I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. I think Encanto is delightfully charming. It's a fun animated musical. I love that it plays tribute to not just Latin culture, but Colombian culture. I love that it just, instead of being like a big conglomeration of a whole bunch of different countries, like they pick one and they really go all in on that. It's also just pays homage to multi-generational families. I loved just seeing the different family interactions, and, you know, there's in-laws and there's this and there's cousins and aunts and uncles. It was just really
especially
fun.
In the same home.
Yeah, exactly. It was just really fun to see. I loved the magical realism of this, and that it was a very simple film. They didn't go on a big grand adventure, but really the way that you were able to solve the problems was within the family working together to do that. And so it was delightfully charming. 4.5 stars.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Llenas de hambre, siguen andando y navegando un mundo que cambia y sigue cambiando. Navegando un mundo que cambia y sigue cambiando. Dos oruguitas paran el viento.
All right, thanks for listening to this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. A huge thank you to Pablo for joining us on this episode.
Yay, Pablo!
Our discussion is so much more robust because of you. And I love that we, not only did we get our favorite Colombian, but someone who is clearly an Encanto super fan.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Just had so many great things that you could share and all the research that you had done about this film. So, and I'm also very happy that it met your expectations and kind of even beyond, like blew them out of the water. Because I know, you know, you could probably be very disappointed in a film like this, right? If it didn't go the right way.
I was so nervous the whole day leading up to it. I had already listened to the music and I loved it. And I had read most reviews and I knew I was going to... I couldn't eat that day. I was so nervous. It was so funny. Also, a fun fact that I forgot to share before was that... So my sister lives in Italy. So she got Luca. And then we got Encanto, and the next year we get Turning Red, which is set in Canada where I live. So mm-hmm. I just really appreciate that Jennifer Lee and Pete Docter are just basing their movies on where me and my family live. Like, I really appreciate that.
That's true. They are cyber stalking now.
Yep.
I am fine with that.
Well, thank you so much. It's always such a delight whenever you're on. I love your insights, and you are welcome back anytime that you want to. All you have to do is ask.
Great.
So, also, for anyone who is listening, if you want all the show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/231. You can also hit us up on Instagram. Let us know your thoughts about Encanto. Tag us in your stories, letting us know your thoughts, and we will repost them on our Instagram. But that is all that we have for today. Thank you again to Pablo. Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.
Hello, hello, hello. I am recording right now. We're live. Let the funny stuff commence.
Ooh, funny.
Recording.
Okay.
Hey, Pablo.
Why is this not working?
Well, I'm excited. We got a lot of stuff on here.
There's a lot to talk about. It's going to be great.
I woke up this morning and I have like the very, very beginnings of a possible sore throat, and I'm like, no. You know what I mean? It's like just that one little tinge of something back there. I'm like, oh no.
Okay, my headphones are not working for some reason, so I need like 2 more minutes. I'm so sorry.
No, yeah, don't take your time. We're fine. This is the way. This is the podcasting way. You podcast 1,000 times, and there's always, you know, something that's going to happen. So we're cool.
It probably is probably close to 1,000 with how many times we've had to re-record stuff.
Oh, God. No way. Come on.
I'm kidding.
Oh, that's just sad and pathetic. We only have like, what, maybe 230 episodes. And that says, on average, we've had to record each episode 4 times. Please,
maybe
no.
Not each episode.
Please,
I've definitely listened to them all an average of 4
sure,
times.
For sure. That's hilarious.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.